Okay, well, I remember we are going away for a couple of weeks. So, well, we'll take a proper vote at the end, maybe. But just think about whether we want to do. So, we're not here for the next 2 Mondays. So, whether we want to do the Monday after that, or whether we want to say we've skipped one and therefore we'll do 4 weeks, i.e., should we do 3 weeks from this Monday or 4 weeks from this Monday? So, anyway, we can take a vote on that after we are finished at the end. So, we are at the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet, or towards the bottom of Gimel Amud Bet. So, that is 3b, if you're following, if it's in English, and we're okay. So we officially got to the two dots, which is about two-thirds of the way down the page. But I think we sort of rushed the end, so it might be worth just sort of summarizing the end of the Gemara that we were doing, and particularly because it's a Gemara that we've spent. It was really the conclusion of a Gemara that we've spent more or less our entire time on. We're sort of moving on to a new, I mean, not an entirely too new topic. Obviously, it's still based on the same Mishnah, but we are moving on to a different discussion. It was a very lengthy discussion in the Gemara that took us more or less from the beginning right up until here. So just as a reminder for everybody, that discussion began with the opinion of Rav Papa, who said that there are some, or there is at least one, Tolda, so one subcategory of Nezikin of these damages, which is dissimilar to the heads category, and we spent a long time trying to figure out what that was. We eventually came to the conclusion. So toward at the end yesterday, we rushed to the conclusion that we were talking about a case of what the Gemara terms tsororos or tsororot, which literally means pebbles or stones, and the cases where an animal is walking along and kicks up some stones, and those stones do damage. So just in its way of walking, it doesn't do it intentionally, but just as it's walking along, it knocks some. I imagine it as a sort of a gravelly path or something, and it knocks some of those little stones, and the stones do damage. So it's sort of like regel, but it's sort of like something. But the point is that the Torah stipulates that only is chatzi nezek, that only pays half damages, which again is a very unusual thing. I know we spend a lot of time talking about it, but that's unusual to pay half damages, and therefore it doesn't seem to fit. It doesn't seem to fit with its head category. It's a particular exception, and therefore we established that that was the case that Rav Papa was referring to. That what we call chatzi nezek tsoros. We spent time at the end discussing the fact that not everybody necessarily agrees to that concept of chatzi nezek tsoros, but the way that the Gemara concludes, let's say the balance of opinion seems to be that we do adopt that, and so we left it there. Maybe let's just begin with the Rashi on chatzi nezek tsoros, because I think that was I looked back at it afterwards, and I think it's helpful to just sort of see it inside, and it lays out for us a little bit more clearly what it is that we're talking about, and then we'll move on from the two dots, unless we have any questions. I always, sorry, I usually start off. If anybody has any questions or comments before we kick off. Yes, Robert.
Are you recording, Rabbi?
Yes, I'm recording. Okay, fine. I'm gonna, again, I'm sorry, I forgot to do this earlier. I'm just gonna mute everyone, but as usual, feel free to unmute yourself if you do have comments or questions. Okay. So we're going to look at this Rashi. Rashi is the bold words. If you have it bolded, it's bechatzi nezek tsoros. In my Gemara, it's about halfway down the page. Rashi is again on the inside of the page, so that's to the left of this one. And as I said, it's about halfway down the page. It's more or less where the Gemara says bechatzi nezek tsoros. So the last three words on the line in the Gemara, again, or more or less in the middle, are bechatzi nezek Tsororos, and then Rashi is just across from that. Everybody see it? Okay, hopefully you're with me. All right. If you're not, just shout. Bechatzi nezek tsoros, shehoisa mehaleches. So the animal was walking along, vehitiza tsoros, and it knocked these, kicked up these stones, beragleha, with her legs, or with its legs, veshivru es hakelim, and with those stones, some utensils were broken. Right, dekaimalon, and this is the key part. Dekaimalon, because we've established the hilchasa gemirla la Moshe Mitzrayim. This is a halacha, what we call a halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim. I think we briefly mentioned this last time, which means that it's not written anywhere in the Torah, but it was handed to Moshe orally at the at Mount Sinai, and tradition we have maintained. So again, which applies to a number of things. The interesting thing over here is that probably not everybody agrees that this is a halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, because it's unusual. Or you have to, according to the Rambam, you can never have a debate when it comes to a halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, because that undermines the point of having a tradition about it. Whereas according to Rashi doesn't seems not to agree with that, because we do have a debate surrounding this. So, but that's more of a sort of a side point about the about Torah Shabbat Al Peh, the oral Torah, and that sort of stuff. But anyway, so Rashi at least says that this is referring to that we don't have any source for this, and we just simply, as I said, have it handed down as a tradition. But not only that, Rashi says, so to go back to the beginning of the other line, Dekaimelon, the Kuf Yud Lamed stands for Dekaimelon, means it's been established. The Hilchos Gemira L'Moshe Mitzrayim, it is a halacha l'Moshe Mitzrayim, was handed down to Moses at Sinai. Dimamonahu velo knas, that it's referred, that this particular payment is what we call mamon and not knas. Now, this is a very important term. These two terms are two sides of two opposites in the realm of nezikin and the realm of damage. Is very important to know. Mamon means money that you are sort of that you rightfully pay. A knas is a fine that is slapped on in addition, right? So one could have argued that there's always a big debate when we have half damages as to whether that is mamona or knasa. Basically, when you are paying half damages, are you really liable to pay everything? And we've sort of let you off a little bit. We've given you like a parking fine. I don't know for those, I'm sure, very good people here never had a parking fine, but I can speak from experience that you get that they give you a full fine, and they say the fine you have to pay is whatever it is £60. But if you pay it in the first 2 weeks, then we'll give you a special discount and you can get 50% off, right? So is that what Chatzi Nezek is saying? Really, you should be paying the whole thing, but we'll give you a special discount. Or it's a knas, or it's the opposite. Really, you shouldn't be liable at all. What the Torah is saying here is that even though technically you're not liable, because there was a little bit of liability here, so we're going to give you a fine. So what Rashi is coming down here is very much on the side that it's momo. He says this is, you are liable to pay. In fact, you should consider yourself very lucky. You should be paying for the full amount over here. Va'af al gav, he continues, Aleph Ayin Gimel, very important Talmudic terminology. Af al gav, even though. So even though the palga nezek. Shel Nagicha, palga is the Aramaic word for chetzi. So this is chetzi nezek, even though you have half damages, shel Nagicha, of an animal that gored, right? So that's different to this tzoros. That was the case we were talking about before, where you pay half nezek, half damages. Have a knas. That is considered to be a fine. Kid amrinon lekaman, as we say later on. So he says this established later on. He's sort of giving the game away a bit. But there's a big debate in the Gemara later on. I think it's on Daf Dalad already, actually. So it's quite soon, but let's look it up. Where does he say? Oh, no, sorry, Tesvav. Not until Tesvav. Okay, so it's on Daf 15, which we'll get to a little bit later, hopefully, at some point, where they discuss Chatzi Nezek of an animal that gored, whether that is damages, whether that's a fine, or whether that's simply what you should be paying, what you should rightfully be paying. So he's comparing the two. V'hilkach, love told her to Karen who, and therefore this does not fall under the category of Karen, because we might naturally think that because we're talking about half damages, this is falling under the category of Karen, because that's the only other place we've ever heard of half damages. Saying no, it doesn't fit. Those half damages are different. That's a fine, and this is one that you're liable to pay. V'hilkach love told the Karen who ella de regel, rather this falls under the category of regel. De mikoach regel hu de osu, because it came from the power of the animal's legs. And again, that doesn't mean literally the legs. In our case, it was talking about the legs, but this could be in anything where the animal just happens to do it while walking. So if it's on the hindquarters of the animal, where the animal, let's say, knocks a log, and that log then rolls down the hill and damages, although rolling down the hill actually may be an additional factor, so let's leave that aside. But just he knocks a log, and the log swings around and breaks something with its hindquarters, that would also fall under the category of regel. So mikach regel hu da'asu, uchoregel lo have. But it's not similar to regel, and this is the key point here. De regel mishalem nezek shalem, because that category pays full damages, and this only pays half damages. And again, that was part of our, that was really what we were searching for. V'hainu de Rav Papa. This therefore fits very neatly into Rav Papa's statement that some, or at least one, of the toldos of the subcategories does not fit perfectly into its head category, and yet it is still considered to be part of that subcategory. Okay, so that's just a bit of back. That was really what we spoke about last time. Now we're up to the two dots, briefly back in our Mishnah, and then we'll move on. Any questions or comments before we go on? Okay, great. So now we're on to the two dots. The two dots, as I said, about three quarters of the way down the page. Hamav'er v'ha'hev'er. So it's the second word in into the line. Hamav'er v'ha'hev'er. So that's referring us back to the Mishnah, specifically to that first word. So the first word of the Mishnah, the first category, which was mav'er. That's what we're going to be discussing now. What exactly is this category of mav'er? At the time, I alluded to the fact that we would have a debate on this. And it's an unclear word, right? When we talk about shor, we know that that's an ox, right? That translates nicely. Bur, right? There's a pit. And again, that's the word that appears in the Torah. So it fits nicely. Mav'er was a strange word that the Mishnah seemed to use. And so we end up with this debate, and we're going to discuss why the Mishnah used that word. All this is going to be, yeah, as I said, this is going to take us for definitely today, and maybe a little bit longer as well. Okay. My mav'er. What is this category, this head category? Rav Omar, Mav'er Zeh Adam. So he says that Mav'er is referring to human damages. If a person does damage themselves, all the other categories are talking about damage done by your property or by something else. So, you know, an animal, for instance. Or we had Aish, right? We talked about the fact that if a person lights a fire and does damage, that's a different category. Or a bur, right? A pit. Or something similar, something that's in a public place, a public hazard of sorts, then that would also be considered to be, again, that doesn't fall under the category of Adam. Adam is direct damage done by the person themselves. Well, Shmuel Omer, he disagrees. So Rav and Shmuel, very common sparring partners in the Gemara, a great pairing. Shmuel Omar, Mav'er Zeh HaShein. He says this is referring to Shein. This is referring to the head category of a tooth, which we mentioned on the previous Omud, is not talking about anything done with the teeth per se, but is talking about where an animal consumes something for its benefit and or does something for its benefit, I should say, and causes damage as a result. So again, some of the subcategories that we mentioned is, let's say, an animal rolls around on top of some fruit to relieve itself of an itch, that would be and damages the fruit as a result. That falls under the category of shein, again, even though it's not done with the animal's teeth. Okay, so that's the debate between Rav and Shmuel. And now we're going to try and find some sort. We're going to sort of figure out what's behind this debate. Rav Omar, Mav'er Zeh Adam. So that's his opinion. Dichsiv, as it says, he brings a verse to back himself up. Where do we connect the word Mav'er to a human being? So Omar Shomer Osavoker Vagam Laila Im Tivayun Ba'ayu. So this verse from Yeshayahu, actually worth looking up. Actually, before I went to Yeshiva, I had a mentor who told me that you should look everything up and it will help you understand things better and to remember things better. And I must say, I've only partially taken him up on his advice, but he was 100% right. So when I remember to look things up, then it's a good idea to look them up. So this verse, as I said, is from Yeshayahu. And some people may be familiar with it. It's from the song that we sing in after Havdalah, or some people sing after Havdalah, actually. Also, they include this phrase. And again, this is part of the prophecies of Isaiah, of Yeshayahu, and talking about the downfall of Bavel, of the Babylonian Empire. And Omar Shomer Asavoker is over here in verse number 12. So he says as follows, He's talking about Seir now. Seir is really Edom, which is the descendant of Esau, who we will, I think we'll also refer to him in a little bit as well. Amar Shama Asavoka. So the watchman says the morning will come and so too will night. Im tiv ayun ba'ayu shuvu e sayu. If you are very, very keen, and many times when we have in Tanakh, you have a double expression. It's to intensify something. So im tiv ayun, the root here, ba'ayu is referring to, they translate it here as really desire it. So you want something a lot, then shuvu esayu. So why are we? So why do we connect that to a person? So the Gemara says, kidmatar my mashma. Right? How do we see? Oh no, sorry, I've skipped ahead. Oh, sorry. So what was the connection over here? Im tivayun ba'ayu. Right, okay, so it's referring to, also voker is referring to not just daytime and nighttime. We're referring to, again, this is a prophecy, so we're talking about a time of redemption. Daytime, the dawn, the light is referring to the time of redemption. Night is referring to the darkness that will befall the those who are not following the path that they should. And therefore, since we're talking about Rishayim and Tzadikim, we're talking about the righteous and the non-righteous, so we're referring to human beings, referring directly to people. Im tiv ayun ba'ayu, again, we're talking about this desire. We're talking about, again, it's a phrase or a word that is associated with people, with human beings, and therefore that's what Rav establishes this phrase as. Very interestingly, does this come up later? Okay, I'll mention it now, actually. So very interestingly, this phrase or this root of bo'i refers to need, actually, or desire. As I said, desire refers to need, refers to want, but it's also a phrase that we associate with prayer, with davening. And the Netziv, I believe, is one of the later commentaries. It was Rosh Hashiva in sort of the 1800s or so. And he says that the reason why the Mishnah is using this word referring to a human being is because that is the essence of a human being. We can give a long shiur about that another time. But the essence of prayer is about ratzon, right? About that desire, about human beings' desire to move forward, to do something more, to go somewhere in life, to be here for a purpose, and that is sort of very much speaks to the essence of a human being. So we're not really getting into the details of that, but a very interesting side point that this Gemara seems to be bringing up is the fact that desire seems to be at the core of what it means to be a human being. So that's just as I said, an interest. And again, the Netziv links that to prayer. So that's just an interesting side point. So that was the opinion of Rav. So he's at least shown why he thinks that Mave refers to Adam, refers to a person. Why does Shmuel disagree? Shmuel Omar Mave Zashain. So we're now about 10 lines from the end. First word on the line, Ushmuel, Shmuel Omar Mave Zashain. Why so? Dichsiv Eich Nech Pasu Esav Nivu Matspunov. So again, this is from the prophet Ovadia, Obadiah, as some people like to call him. And it says, Esav is searching, sorry, they are searching for Esav, again, referring to this same enemy of the Jewish people, Edom, Esav, all linked together. And he says, literally means they uncovered those which were covered up. So those which were hidden, those things which were hidden, are uncovered. So why does and in this context nivu means uncovered? So what does that have to do with teeth? So the Gemara requires a little bit of further explanation. My mashma, the Gemara wants to know. So how does that link to a mouth? Kidmatar game, Rabbi Yosef. As Rabbi Yosef translates, Rabbi Yosef is someone who was known for his translations. Maybe we'll look at that tosis in a moment. Actually. So Rav Yosef was someone who's known for his translations. In those days, it was translations into Aramaic. So he translates as follows. Ichdein isbelish esav isgilin mitamrohi. So now we have to translate that back for ourselves, right? Because Aramaic doesn't help us much. So he says as follows. Rav Yosef is translating it. Where's my good explanation over here? They put it very nice. Oh, yes, over here. Okay. So how the enemies of Esav are searching for him in all the places in the world, and what they're doing is they are, as I said, they are uncovering Matzbunov, those which he has covered up. So he has these hidden soldiers. They're searching for him, and eventually they find this this army, and they are uncovering it. Now, what does that have to do with teeth? So the commentaries explain that this is linked to the fact that teeth are the part of the body that sort of become covered and uncovered. Other parts of the body are simply covered or uncovered, whereas teeth seem to be revealed on occasion and on other occasions not. So they sort of, because they are as I say, uncovered and covered regularly. So this idea of uncovering something is linked to a tooth, and therefore that's the hint for Shmuel's opinion that he would connect the word mav'er to Shane. Just an interesting side point is that Tosus mentions that Rav Yosef was blind, and that some people mistakenly, at least according to Tosus, some people mistakenly attribute Rav Yosef as the person who was in charge of the person who was good at translations, that he was that person because he was blind. And Tosus says, no, that's not true, because he needed to. It wasn't just because he was blind. He happened to be very, very good at translations anyway. And he clarifies, "Veloke de pirish ba'alma lefishos hayasagi nahar." This is Tosus, the second last one. So it's on the right of the page. In the middle. "Udevarim shebichsav iatarashay lomar alper." So he says, no, the fact that he was blind is an irrelevance to this, because he clearly wasn't the person who was there who was calling out they would have a maturgam on. They would have at the time they would have someone who would read from the Torah and someone who would translate. And if someone was blind, he was not allowed to read from the Torah, and we still do that today. They're not allowed to read from the Torah, because it's very, very important that that is seen, that things which are written down, the Torah shebichsav, it's important to keep it written. Whereas something which is translated, something which is orally transmitted, is okay to be, or more than okay, is ideal to be transmitted orally. Whereas Rav Yosef was blind. So he continues and clarifies that in theory he would have been able to say these words ba'al peh, even though they're written down. Why? Because for the same reason that we continue to do that today, same reason that we have Torah Sheba'al Peh written down, that we have the oral law written down, and we also at times sort of use the written Torah and we say it, because he quotes the verse Eis La'asos La'Hashem, a very important principle that the Gemara introduces, that there are times where in order to maintain the continuation of Torah, we do actually have to bend those rules. Very, very rare example of this, but as I said, I just thought it was an interesting side point.
Rabbi?
Yes?
Yeah, question for you. We're talking about something which is revealed and then closed, being the teeth closed by the lips, presumably. But likewise, your eyes are open and closed by your eyelids.
Right.
So if what we're talking about here is Mavah is a man, the actions of man.
No, that's in the opinion. This is in the opinion that it's referring to a tooth. This is the other opinion.
Yeah.
So the opinion of Rav is that it's referring to damages done by man, and the opinion of Shmuel is that it's referring to damages which are under the subcategory of Shane, which literally means a tooth. So that's so he's bringing the proof from the verse in Avadya, and but I think it's an interesting point that you're making, that the tooth is not the only part of the body that's revealed and not revealed. I don't know, perhaps you'd just say that the eye is revealed all the time. We just close the eyelid just to sort of keep it moist, but we don't sort of ideally close our eyes. We do it in protection as opposed to because they're supposed to be revealed or unrevealed. I'm not sure exactly. It's a good question. That's what I would say. Listen, I think with with this specifically, the idea is that they're looking for a hint as to what the word, what the translation of the word in the Mishnah is. So what is the link between this this set of damages and that word? Why would the Mishnah, why is that an appropriate word for the Mishnah to have used in that case? So again, Rav found a verse that seemed to link that root bet ayin hey to human beings, whereas Shmuel's chosen a different verse which seems to link that root to things which become uncovered, and in that translation he says that that's a hint to the tooth. Yes, Robert.
Unless I'm mistaken, and there's a good chance I could be, in the past, the last while, we'll be trying to establish the which is the root for these categories. The main case, it's always been done as the that has to come from the Torah, whereas this isn't, these sources aren't from the Torah.
Right, so that's a great question. So when we, even when we were doing that, actually, we still clarified that when you were looking for a, we actually had that earlier on Daf Bet Amud Bet, so 2b towards the top, we actually gave an example of this where we were using the verses not for a source, but to find a literary connection. So that's what we're doing over here as well. This is just a literary connection, and there's nothing being learnt from this. This is not a source. Maybe source is the wrong word. We're simply using this as a literary connection. We're saying, where else do you see this root, bet, ayin, hey, being used in that context, Shmuel? You know, why are you translating mave as shein? Where else do you see that word being used in that context? So he says, I've seen that word being used in the context of uncovering and covering. And this is my example. Rav says, no, I've seen that root being used in the context of human beings, and that's my, and this is my example, and that's why we're, so as I said, it's not sources per se, that's a great question, and we're just using it as a literary link.
Because you had a similar thing in the tooth consumes. You had that
exactly.
Back when kings, you had the same type of idea.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly, yes, on 2B, very good. Okay, so that's just really at the beginning. Now we actually talk about the debate itself. Okay, as I said, that was just a little bit of linking, you know, just figuring out the words themselves. But now we have this debate. We have this debate between Rav and Shmuel. One says it's talking about Adam. One says it's talking about Shein. What's behind this debate, and what are the details? So that's what the Gemara wants to know. V'rav Omar, so we're now about nine lines from the end of the page, middle of the word, middle of the line, V'rav. First, starting with the word V'rav. First word on the line is Itgalim, and the V'rav is in the middle of the line. V'rav my timer lo Omar Kashmuel. What is the reason that Rav did not follow the opinion of Shmuel? What is the disagreement about? Omar Lacha, he says, Mikatani niv'er, right? It doesn't say niv'er, i.e., if we're talking about, now this is Rav following Shmuel, so Rav doesn't like Shmuel's opinion because he says, if it's referring to Shein, right, then it should say niv'er, i.e., nigle. It becomes revealed. The nun in Hebrew makes something passive, right? The teeth do not reveal themselves. They are revealed by something else. It's something else acting on them. So it should have said niv'eh, not mav'eh. Mav'eh sounds active. So that's why that's why Rav didn't like that opinion, or didn't like that translation. Shmuel, now we reverse it round. Or Shmuel, my timer, lo omar karav. Why didn't Shmuel follow the opinion of Rav? Why didn't he like the idea of it referring to a human being? Omar lecha mikatani bo'er michdi. Okay, fine. So mikatani bo'er. So he says it doesn't say bo'er. So he thought it should have said that the person is doing it. Mav'er is a much stronger sense that is being given here, and therefore he thinks that doesn't fit with Adam, and therefore, again, we've ended up in this catch 22 once again. Neither one seems to fit particularly well into the verse. Neither one is brilliant from a literary perspective. So now we're going to go back and try and figure it out from a logical perspective, try and figure out their opinions from a different perspective. Nichdi kroi lo kamar daiki velo kamar daiki, right? So the Gemara concedes the fact that that the verse themselves, kroi, the verses, lo kamar daiki velo kamar daiki, do not particularly sound, they don't sit brilliantly according to either opinion. So now again we revert to our original question. Rav my time or mem tet stands for my time, or what is the reason? Rav my time alo Omar Kashmuel. What is the reason that Rav doesn't follow the opinion of Shmuel? So Tana says as follows. Tana, we have a Mishnah later on. This Mishnah is on Yud Gimel Amad Beis, according to my notes, or according to this the notes in the corner over here. So it's on 13b. Shor v'chol mili d'shor. So we said, oh no, sorry, I've got the wrong. Okay, I might forget my. Yes, sorry, I've got the wrong. Forget my notes. Nothing to do with the Mishnah later on. We're talking about our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, Rav is saying he doesn't like. He says shor v'chol mili d'shor. Right, he's saying that that when the Mishnah uses the word shor, it's referring to anything that's to do with an ox, right? Anything that's to do with animal damages, and therefore we had four head categories listed in the Mishnah: shor, bur, mav'eh, and heveh. So if shein is falling under the category of shor, then mav'eh is free to be something else, right? So from a logical perspective, He's saying it just doesn't fit, right? It would have made more sense to subsume Keren, Shane, and Regel altogether, those three under the heading of, or under the word Shor in the Mishnah. And therefore, Mav'eh must be referring to something else, and therefore it's referring to human damages. Ushmuel Nami, Hotana Le Shor. Surely Shmuel also has the word Shor in the Mishnah, so why doesn't he agree with that? Omer of Yehuda, Tana shor lekarno umav'eh lashino. He says Mishnah is referring to shor for the sake of its for the sake of keren. Right, when it says shor, it just means that particular category, just referring to one particular category. And mav'eh lashino, mav'eh is referring to the shein category, which is slightly different. Okay, we are very much in the middle, but I'm conscious that we're going through a lot of stuff. So if anyone has any questions, just take a 5-second break. If anyone wants to make a comment or question. Okay. So now we're in the opinion of Shmuel, right? So Shmuel doesn't like Rav's opinion because he says Shor is referring to Keren, Mav'eh is referring to Shane, and therefore, right, what's the obvious one that's missing? What happened to Regel? So we'll have to figure that out. The Gemara is going to come back to it. So now we go back to our Mishnah. V'hochi ka'omar. So now we're reading back into our Mishnah. This is what the Mishnah was saying. Lo ra'i ha-keren. When we said lo ra'i zeh, kira'i zeh, right? Early on we said that there is an element of each one that doesn't seem to work with the other, right? So just to, if anyone wants to turn back to the Mishnah, we'll just sort of refer back. We listed the four head categories. And then with each one, we said, this one's not like that one, and that one's not like this one. There was a downside to each one that didn't seem to fit with the other one. The lower Ezek, or Ezek. So if that's the case, so what are we, so now we're plugging that in more specifically, because now we're into each opinion. So now, according to the opinion of Shmuel, Hochi Ka'omar, this is what it means. Lower Eha Keren. It doesn't mean shor, it means keren. It's only referring to that particular category. She'ein hana'a lehezeko, because there is no benefit to its damages. Kira'i ha'shein, she'yesh hana'a lehezeko, like shein, which does have, which does get benefit, right? V'lo ra'i ha'shein. So in that sense, shein has a better reason maybe to be liable, because it's getting benefit, right? Because the animal's actually gaining something, right? In the case of Keren, not really gaining anything. So maybe that should work in your favor. So that's on one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is the reverse. L'ra'i ha'shein, she'in kavanos al-hazik. Shein was not intentional. They didn't intend to cause you damage, right? It was just, it was a byproduct, right? They didn't mean to do that. Kiri ha'keren, she'kavanos al-hazik. Whereas keren has a reason, has a sort of a downside over shein, because the animal had intended to cause damage. You saw it charge at the other animal when it caused it damage. It was intentional, and therefore in that sense keren is a little bit worse. So therefore that was what the Mishnah was referring to when it was saying that neither category can be learnt from the other. V'lav kal v'chomehu. So now kuf vav is a kal v'chomeh. Great Talmudic expression. Again, kal v'chomeh literally means that you have a lenient category and a stringent category, and perhaps we can learn one from the other. So for instance, a kal v'chomer is if you have a very large person who is sitting on my bike and they can manage, then all the more so a smaller person could manage to manage to pedal this bike up the hill because they're not carrying all that extra weight or whatever. You know, that's a kal v'chomer. So you have something that seems to be logically more lenient and more stringent, and you figure one out from the other. So love kal v'chomer here, the Gemara says, no, that's not a kal v'chomer, this doesn't work. Why? Because neither one is obviously more lenient than the other. The Gemara is asking the opposite. The Gemara is saying, is this not a kal v'chomer? It's a rhetorical question. Surely this is a kal v'chomer. Shein, as this category, shein kavanos el hazik, Chayev, right? If you have no intention, this animal has no intention to cause any damage, and yet it's still liable. Keren shekavanos lahazik lo kol shekain. Shouldn't we say all the more so that that when the animal damages on purpose, it sets out to cause damage, that you should be liable, right? Surely all the more so that would be the logical thing, suggests the Gemara. So no, itzdrich. The Gemara then says that doesn't work. We in fact do need both categories. Why? Sal kadaitach amina, samach dalad amina, sal kadaitach amina. One might have thought, right? I might have thought incorrectly as follows. Midi dahava aeved va'amar. The logic doesn't quite work because we have exceptions to this rule, and that those being the case of a servant which is we're talking about in the times of the Gemara, or really earlier, when it was considered to be like the property of the person. Of course, we do have rules in the Torah as to how that person was treated, and they were never treated quite as badly as slaves, as other slaves were. But it wasn't something we're intending to continue today, a practice that we're intending to continue today. But it does have important ramifications, and this is one of them. So the Gemara talks about an Eved Va'ama, where you have these servants, and the Gemara says that they are an exception to this rule. Why? Eved va'ama, lav af algav de kafanozon lahazik, afilu hochi patiri. So we say, even though if you have a servant who goes and causes damage, even though technically they would be, one would think logically that they are, that it would be the master who is liable to pay, right? Because you're liable to pay all of their bills. You're liable to pay, everything. On behalf of this servant. So surely if they cause damage, you should be liable. So the Gemara says elsewhere that no, damage that's caused by a servant, by this particular servant, is not considered to be the master's responsibility. Why? Because, haninami loshna. Oh, sorry, we haven't got to why yet. Let's explain why in a moment. But before we get to the why, the reason why a servant is, or the reason why the servant's master is not liable for damages in that case, before we get to the reason, the point is that we have a case now where they caused intentional damage, and despite causing intentional damage, they were still considered to be sorry, their property caused intentional damage, and despite the fact that their property caused intentional damage, they're still considered to be potter, right? They're still considered to be exempt. So therefore, your kal vachomer doesn't work, where our logic seems to fall apart. We were trying to suggest that if we have a case, namely shame, so of an animal eating, which has no intent to damage, all the more so, any case where your property does have intent to damage, you would be liable. So we're breaking that down by bringing a case where you have property which does have intent to damage, and despite that, you're still considered to be exempt. So as the master of that property, you're still considered to be exempt. So now let's just briefly go through the reason, and then we'll stop for questions if anyone has any questions.
I was going to say, doesn't that come down?
Can we just finish the reasoning before we get there? Just because it's all part of the same thing. So Haninami lo shna. So Omar of Ashi. Omar of Ashi. What's the reason? Otu eved va'ama lav taima. So he says Otu eved va'ama. Right. So what's that? What's the Gemara? Give me a moment to just. Yes. Okay. So Otu Eved V'Ama, right? Who love time of Rabbahi. So they say that we have a very good reason why they should be liable, right? Sorry, why they should not be why the master is not liable, because love time of Rabbah is behu. They've got a very good reason why they're not liable, and therefore that shouldn't really work. Shema Yaktino Rabbo, because maybe they will they'll get very angry with their master. He'll upset them. V'yelech. V'yadlik gadisha shel chavero, and he'll go and set fire to the next door's property. V'nimtazem achayves rabo me'amona, and he'll end up causing his master an enormous bill as a result of it. And therefore, when it comes to human beings, that would be an exception to the rule. I think we've done a lot of stuff there, and I want to try and clarify what we've done. Let's take Andy's question, and then I'll see if we can just go through it again just to make it a bit clearer. Go on, Andy.
Yeah, my question was going to be that there is a different in kind here, and I would say the distinction is in the case of a slave, albeit considered the property of the master, it still has the ability to think, whereas the property which is animal clearly doesn't. So their action will be, by definition, not intentional.
So I think that is, I think that's a great point, and I think you've very succinctly put what the Gemara is trying to say, actually, or what I was trying to explain the Gemara say. So that's really the Gemara's response, that the Eved and the Amah, the human being, still has the choice, and therefore they can go. An animal doesn't go and cause intentional damage just to get at the master, right? If the animal goes and causes intentional damage for whatever reason, right, your animal chose to charge at someone else and cause them damage, I don't know why they chose to do that, but it certainly wasn't in order to leave you with a hefty bill, right? Whereas a servant, in this case, may well do that, right? You say the wrong thing and you get them very upset, and what they do, a clever servant, right, goes and destroys the neighbor's Rolls Royce, and all of a sudden, you're left with this, £250,000 bill to try and replace the neighbor's Rolls Royce, because they know that, you know, that you're the one who's going to have to foot that bill. So therefore, the Torah set it up in a way where you're not going to be liable for that. But as Andy points out, that is an exception to the rule, right? That's an exception. The logic should still apply. That as a general rule, right, certainly with regards to animals, right, with regards to other property, if your animal has no intention to damage, and we know that that's liable, then all the more so, we should say that when the animal does have intention to damage, they should be liable, right? We shouldn't need to have this extra verse, and therefore, we end up in this interesting, as I say, so we've sort of gone back to where we were a little bit earlier. Okay? So I think that was a very good point. There was something else I was going to say on that, but I think I've forgotten. So, yes. We had another question, David?
Yeah, well, I just want to say that I think I got a bit lost where we went over the page from the bottom of page 3 to the top of page 4, from Gimel to Dalet, where we go across and we're trying to explain why Rav and Shmuel disagree, I think. And then, so I got a bit lost when you seem to then say that you brought in, I think you bring in Shane and Maver. Yes, is that right?
That's the disagreement of Rav and Shmuel. Shane and...
All right. But when you go right back to the Mishnah, Shane is not a main category. You're trying to compare a main category with a non-main category.
So Mav'er, the category of Mav'er, which the Mishnah lists, is a debate between Rav and Shmuel. What exactly does that word mean? So Rav says...
listed as being one of the four major, one of the four Av. Right in the Mishnah, it says Av, you know, there's... What are the main? We've got Shor, Bor, and Mav'er.
So what is Maver, though?
Well, you know, but what I'm saying is that at that stage, we hadn't introduced Shane. Right at the beginning of the Mishnah, right at the beginning.
We didn't introduce Shane anywhere yet. At no point in the Mishnah does the Mishnah mention Shane.
That's right. So that's why I'm a bit confused as to why now in discussing the disagreement between Rav and Shmuel, we're comparing Maver with Shane.
We're not comparing them. That is what Mav'er means. What does Mav'er mean? What does the word mean?
We're still trying to work out what it means. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yes. When the Mishnah listed those words, we don't know what those words mean. Sure, we know what Ashur is. We know it's referring to certain damages done by an animal, right? Yeah. Some yes, some no. Bur, we know what that means. Hev'er means to light something on fire. So that's pretty obvious. That's referring to Aish, which again, we haven't really discussed, we'll come back to. Mav'er is this strange category, which we're not sure what it means, and therefore we have a debate. What exactly is Mav'er? What does that word mean? So Rav says it means human damages. Shmuel says it means Shane. That is the category of Shane. The Mishnah is listing the category of Shane. Now,
wouldn't he have said then that word Shane would come right at the beginning of the Mishnah in that case? That you wouldn't use this word Mav'er at all.
So that was the previous point. Why does the Gemara use the word Mav'er as opposed to Shane? So that's why he brought the verse from Ovadia to say that the word that's what the word Shane means. Now the Gemara then concedes the fact that from a literary standpoint, it's a bit shaky, right? It's a little bit shaky to say that that's what we're referring to Shane, and therefore Shmuel's trying to back himself up. Logically, he's saying that Mav'er can't refer to Adam, right? Doesn't refer to Adam. Or we haven't really got to Shmuel's logical point, actually. We'll get to that a bit later on. At the moment, what we're saying is that neither Rav nor Shmuel has a brilliant way of translating Mav'er from a literary standpoint. So what we're trying to figure out is from a logical standpoint, maybe they have a better way of understanding, of fitting Mav'er into the Mishnah as the category that they are, i.e. For Rav, that's Adam, and for Shmuel, that's Shane. From a logical perspective, they're going to try and present to you why they feel that that's the category, that that's what the translation of Mav'er means in this case, right? So right now, we're not really proving Shmuel's point. We're proving Rav's point at the moment. We're trying to figure out, Rav, my time a little, because Shmuel, he doesn't like Shmuel's opinion because for a number of reasons. So we've sort of gone to the reverse, to be fair. We started out by saying, so the flow of the Gemara was as follows. We started out by saying Rav's claim against Shmuel was that when it says the word shor, that includes all categories that are done by an animal. And Shmuel is now having a response to that. So Shmuel's response is, no, it's not referring to that. It's saying shor was just referring to the keren damages. And Shane was referring to the, sorry, and Mav'er was referring to the Shane damages, and that's basically where the Gemara has taken us. Does that help a little?
It probably helps. If I go through it later, I'll probably.
Okay. Is anyone else sort of keeping up with that element of it? we think. Okay, so I'll say it once more just to try and clarify. The flow, I think what the flow of the Gemara is as follows. That Rav, the Gemara said, the Gemara is trying to logically say that Rav would, maybe let's do without the names for the moment. Mav'er, see, the reason why Mav'er should not mean Shane, right, suggests the Gemara. The reason why Mav'er should not mean Shane is because Shane should fall under the category of Shur, right? It should fall under the category of all animal damages. So the Gemara, as a rejoinder to that, says, no, when it says Shur, it is only referring to the Keren category. Mav'er is referring to the Shane category. That's what the word Mav'er means. And then the Gemara then proceeds to read that back into the Mishnah. So when the Mishnah said, Lo Re'izeh, Kir'izeh, the category of Shur is not like the category of Mav'er, and they each have a sort of a positive and a negative to them. So that was referring to Shane and Keren, and therefore it reads it back in to each one. So Shane has a positive in the sense that you gain benefit. Keren seems to be stricter in the sense that you have intention to damage, or the animal has intention to damage. And the fact that we talked about intention to damage took us on a little bit of a tangent to suggest that perhaps because something has intention to damage, that should be obvious. Once we know that something doesn't have intention to damage is liable, if something does have intention to damage, then all the more so. And therefore, we've ended up where we are now, which is where we attempted to bring a proof from the case of a servant, and then we said it's not a good proof, as Andy pointed out, because the servant has their own ability to think for themselves, and therefore they may go and cause damage intentionally in order just to rack up the master's bills, and therefore that's not a good place to learn it from. Okay, so that's where we've got to until now. I hope that's a little bit clearer. We'll try and do that a little bit more next time. Let's keep going to try and find a good place to stop, unless you had a different question on this point before we go on. Okay. So now we are about 10, maybe 8 lines down from the top. The first part on the line is Ella. Okay, so it's Ella Parich. So now we're going to try and do the opposite. Okay, so Parich Hochi. So let's ask this way around, i.e., the reverse. We're going to flip it around. Lo ri ha keren shekavonoso lahazik, kiri ha shein shein kavonoso lahazik. Right, we just said that Shane, if I have Shane where you're gaining benefit, all the more so we should have Keren where you're not gaining benefit. Sorry, the opposite. If I have Shane which has no intention of damaging, all the more so I should have Keren where you do have intention to damage. So now we're flipping it around. Lo ri'a Keren shekavanoso lahazik. Keren, you're intentionally damaging. Kiri'a Shane she'in kavanoso lahazik. But lo ri'a Shane. But now we have this element to Shane, which is sheyesh hana lezeko. You're gaining benefit. The animal is benefiting. Kiri'a Keren she'in hana lezeko. But it has no intention to benefit, and therefore they each have an element to them that is stronger than the other, and since they each have an element that is stronger than the other, therefore we do actually need to have both categories, right? As I said, that was really a little bit of a side point. That was going back into the Mishnah itself. The reason we ended up back there is because we're now rereading the Mishnah, as it were, now that we have plugged back in what the words actually mean. We couldn't say that in the Mishnah because we didn't know what the word Mav'er meant earlier on. Now we know what the word, or at least according to, we're going to have to do it piece by piece. According to Shmuel, we know what the word Mav'er means. It means Shane. And if that's the case, then that's fine. What Shmuel has also done for us, at least at the moment, is he said, Keren is referring to, Shur is referring to Keren. Now, if that's the case, what's the obvious question? What's happened to Regel, right? Because we had these three animal categories, Heren, Shane, and Regel. So what's happened to Regel? So now the Gemara says, V'regel, my Shire, where's it gone? Where's it disappeared to? Where does that appear in the Mishnah? Kashehizik chov hamazik la'asuye regel. So if you remember earlier on, the Mishnah then had a sort of a catch-all phrase that came up at the end. Uchashehizik. So again, if anyone's back in the Mishnah, it's the seventh line down. Ukashehizik chov hamazik l'shalein. And when the animal causes damage, that was like a more general statement. So that was the catch-all. So Regel falls into the catch-all. Regel falls into that category. It falls in, not category, but falls into that statement of the Mishnah. Ukashehizik chov hamazik la'asuye Regel. That's to include Regel. V'lisni b'hadei. Let it be taught on its own, right? Why does Regel only get relegated to being included in a catch-all, right? It wants to be specified. When you say the thank yous at the end, no one wants to be in the thank you to everyone. You want to be specified, right? You always get, there's a few people who are specified, and then you get the sort of catch-all thank you afterwards. So Regel wants to be not stuck in the catch-all. Regel should be specified at the beginning. Ella Omar Rava. So now Rava interprets the Mishnah in the reverse way. And we're going to have to leave it here. We'll come back to this, I think, next time. But Omar Rava, Tana Shur Laraglo Umav Elashino. He says, when it says the word Shur, that's referring to Regel, right? We just said earlier that Shur was referring to Keren. He says, no, Shur is referring to Regel. Now, we're going to end up having the same problem later on, which is, why should Keren be relegated to the catch-all? But we'll have to deal with that, as I said, next time. The Gemara is now going to go back and reread the Mishnah, assuming these new translations. So I'll try and just summarize briefly one more time, and hopefully, when we started out the Mishnah, we had the four words in the Mishnah, and three of them seemed obvious to us. One of them we didn't really know what the word meant. So Shur, Bur, and Hev'er seemed obvious to us. We didn't know what the word Mav'er meant. So once we figured out that Mav'er means one of two things, we've now gone back to the Mishnah to try and plug that back in. So according to Rav, Mav'er meant a person, and that fits again seemingly relatively well at the moment. Well, we haven't really got to Rav's opinion. What we've been doing is attacking Shmuel's opinion. Effectively, we've been saying Shmuel, it doesn't fit so well because. For all sorts of reasons, Shane doesn't seem to fit into that category, and therefore we had a number of questions on that point. In so doing, he also retranslated for us the word Shur and said that was only referring to Keren, or now he's saying it only refers to Regel. And so if that's the case, we're going to have to figure out where the other category seems to have disappeared to. Where is the Keren or where is the Regel? And that's really... yeah, hopefully it wasn't too complex, but that's really the thrust of what the Gemara has been doing over these last few lines. Any last questions, and then we'll take our vote for the next time. Okay. No more questions. All right, so I'm